Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. About a minute past the hour on this, the 16th day of November 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is, in fact, where we live. That's where you go to jump into the chat room, say hi to Third Stage Guild Navigator Sparky, who has folded space to become Man Cave this evening. Texas D waiting eagerly in the room as well, and more wandering in minute by minute by minute, of which you too can be a part. All you got to do is go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click chat room, and then pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and there you go. You'll be in the midst of the madcap merriment and mayhem that is the real-time multimedia extravaganza, otherwise known as Horn Chat. There's Doug Aponch and Anatole. Good evening. And, of course, this is more than, well, any evening is more than just the evening, but, well, this 16th day of November, in point of fact, is Moran Monday. Oh, and I tell you what, there's nothing like a healthy serving of murder, terrorism, and mayhem to bring the Morans out from behind the baseboards where they live and send them scurrying around the metaphorical 3 a.m. darkened kitchen that is our world. Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, this also happens to be a listener-supported operation. And, we try to raise $200 every evening in order to keep things going here, keep things afloat. There's not a lot of padding built into that. We've got bills that need to be addressed and will continue to need to be addressed as we go forward. And a little bit of an announcement, and there's some finger-crossing going on involved here, not as in being duplicitous, but as in, you know, for luck, the last things are going into place to make filling in for the Malloys in their absence during Thanksgiving week a reality. And it is not for certain yet, but if all the molecules line up right, all next week we'll see this program not air from 6 to 9 p.m. Instead, I'll be filling in for Mike Malloy from 9 to midnight Eastern Time, of course, 6 to 9 Pacific, and God only knows what time elsewhere. But that's the plan. It is not dead rock solid certain yet because we've still got equipment to test, but it's looking perhaps more yes than no, we hope. And some of these things are issues that are out of my control, like, you know, scheduling an engineer in here and things like that. But yes, that's the plan. That's the plan. The other side of that plan, and I regret to announce this, is that the live broadcast of Poetry, Prose, and Plain Song over at Secret Sandwich Society this coming Wednesday is going to have to go by the boards. And that sucks, but that's when the engineer can be here, and I have to be here when the engineer is here. See how that goes? So that's a shame, but it doesn't mean we can't do it later, because we certainly can. All right, then. It is more and Monday. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, if you do want to help keep us on the air, well, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. There you will find your options. You fill in the amount, and maybe you want to become a subscriber. And thank you very kindly to our dear friend of long standing, Reinhard, who became a subscriber over the weekend. It's much appreciated. You know, we're trying to, and we have a name. We have a name, courtesy of Shirley in Wisconsin. She of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. We have a name. I know I did this unilaterally, but this was the best that I've heard yet. The formidable 400. So that's what we're going to go with. And we're trying to cross the barrier toward the first 100 of the formidable 400. And hopefully we will eventually get all the way to 400 so I never have to talk about fundraising again. Wouldn't that be lovely? I'd be thrilled. But anyway, at the PayPal interface, if you just want to make it one time, you click, you just put the amount in and go, and you fill in the stuff, and you don't have to worry about filling it in, what it is you do down in the secretarial pool at McMahon and Tate for Mr. Tate, but if you'd like to make a subscription, you click the box that says make this a recurring subscription, and bang, away we go. Okay? If you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, that's a possibility too. You can always send checks and money orders to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And again, that's not made out to me, but to The Horn, because that's stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. I never see him, and he sends them off so that we can do all the bill paying when he puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches into the echo chamber that is otherwise our mailbox. Okay? It is Moran Monday, and, you guys are tuned into that now. And I had a number of emails in anticipation thereof. And just real quick, back to the subscription issue. Had a lovely email from Tony in Chico, California. Tony says, "Hope you had a good weekend," and I think he means that for all of us. As a longtime Horn listener, I would like to issue a challenge to my fellow listeners for this week. For every person that signs up as a monthly subscriber, I will donate $10, up to a total of $100. I know that some people may be intimidated to use PayPal for the first time, but if I can do it, and I am not a rocket surgeon, ho-ho! Everyone who listens to the Horn can figure it out. The reason I want to add people's subscriptions is because I'm celebrating getting a solar system put on my house this Saturday. It took 15 years. But I'm finally getting it. Keep up the good work, Bob, and everyone in the Horn community. Tony and Chico. P.S. Just listened to prayer meeting Wednesday last night, this morning. I love it when Pastor Pillow stops into the Cathedral of Common Sense. Don't we all? We have fun. Yeah. Bless his heart. He's such a tireless missionary. Pastor Pillow is. Him and the blimp. Another challenge remains on the table. Sister Carol has informed me that the $20 challenge remains on the table if we can refrain from using that guy's name for another 3 hours this evening. I think she's just enjoying needling Gerald, because, well, Gerald likes winning the pool, dang it. But maybe it'll be another evening of free radio. We can hope. Okay, so beautiful. So to recap, The next 10 people who sign up for a $10 subscription get their first month subscription doubled, courtesy of Tony and Chico. Thank you, Tony. Thank you very, very kindly. What else? Well, let's see. Had a note from Mike, one of several Mikes here in the Horn Family Commune congregation, with an early nomination. So, toward that end, let's get things going, shall we? Yes. Make it all official and whatnot.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. What goes on in this tent, this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, somewhere behind your speakers? It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed, we have them all. Each and every kind, each and every variety. We have birther Morans, deather Morans, tenther Morans, booger-eating Morans, ninther Morans. We have John Bircher Morans, libertarian Morans, republican Morans, right-wing Morans, conservative Morans, Morans of any, every straight stripe and variety. Indeed, indeed, indeed. And it all costs less than 17 cents per hour. Not even two thin dimes per hour of programming. Indeed, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. Being Morans, you just can't tell them much. Hurry, hurry, hurry. We do advise people entering the Moran Monday tent to be cognizant of the things about them, to hang on to children, small animals, purses, wallets, and European messenger bags, as being Republicans, right-wingers, booger-eaters, etc., they can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. Especially this evening, you will. I mean, honest to Pete. They proliferated. I often say like mushrooms after a spring rain, but this is just ridiculous. The terrorist attack in Paris. You would think that it happened in, you know, Paris, Tennessee, or Paris, Kentucky, or Paris, Mississippi, instead of the Paris. Oh, the right-wingers are out in force. And, of course, the problem is that we have a for-profit media who are more than happy to exploit them and inflame them and enrage them. And so I go first this evening with our first nominee to a note I received from Mike a little bit ago, and I think it is a nomination well taken. The subject line says, I would suggest NBC's Meet the Press for Moran Monday. I found out what it must have been like, to be a guy listening to the radio in 1938 Nazi Germany. Oh, we're getting close, but we're not over the line. Listening to Meet the Press on Sunday. It was all a commercial for going to war against Syria because Paris was attacked by those attacking Syria. There is a push to get France to invoke NATO Article 5 so all of NATO can go to war with France as we put a no-fly zone over Syria. Oh, if only Mexico would do that with regards to Texas and we could watch Donald Trump's hair catch fire. NATO Article 5 was meant for actual invasion, not an attack by eight guys, most of all of whom have been killed or captured. Back in the 1980s, I remember all kinds of terrorist attacks in Europe and no talk of invoking Article 5 of the NATO Charter.
While the U.S. invoked Article 5 with regards to the 9/11-2001 attacks, it was not really valid, as the 19 attackers were, well, you know, dead. And unlike December 7, 1941, there was no declaration of war delivered to the White House, nor any flag flown by the attackers. July 25, 1995 to October 17, 1995, three Paris Metro and RER bombings, 8 dead, 157 injured inside Paris, no Article 5. Huh? That was 20 years ago. August 15, 1998, Omagh, Northern Ireland, United Kingdom, two car bombings, UK, no Article 5. March 11, 2004, Madrid, Spain bombing of four trains, 191 dead, 1,876 injured, more killed and injured, no Article 5. July 7, 2005, London, England bombing of three subway trains and one bus killing 56 and 784 injured, no Article 5. 10 October 2015, two suicide bombings at a political rally in Ankara, Turkey, killed 128 and injured up to 400. 108 fatalities, 128, no Article 5. In the 1980s, there were people protesting Reagan's wars in Central America. Even in January 1991, there were people protesting President Bush's desire to force Iraq out of Kuwait. 2002 and 2003, there were people protesting against war in Iraq. But today, there is a Democrat in the White House, and as Robert Reich said, the silence is deafening. Hillary, during the Saturday debate, argued that the AUMF gave the authority to go after the terrorists. No, the AUMF was restricted to those who attacked us on 9/11-2001, and ISIS didn't exist then. Oh, but they were thinking about it, and the authorization of use of military force can always be triggered against thoughts. And by the way, Mike continues, from the Congressional Record, September 14th, 2001, S-9417, Senator Kerry. Oh, goody, I get to do my Senator Kerry impression. Yay me. Anger and sadness. This resolution leaves no doubt that the Congress is united in full support of the President, who would at the time have been, of course, dim leader during the Reign of Error. We have given the President the authority that he needs to respond to this unprecedented attack on American citizens on U.S. soil. This resolution, oh my God, I'm afraid people are going to let go to sleep or something. This resolution allows the President to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or individuals who are responsible for this attack and against those who helped or harbored them, but it does not give the President a blanket approval to take military action against others under the guise of fighting international terrorism. It is not an open-ended authorization to use force in circumstances beyond those we face today. You know, even with the monotone, that seems pretty unequivocal, doesn't it? Under the Constitution, the President has the authority to act if there is an imminent attack on the United States. That authority is recognized in this resolution. The tragedy our nation experienced this week brought home to every American the reality of terrorism. Now we must respond. That response must be forceful and unequivocal. I am confident it will be. And we could always just send him over there to read to him. Never mind, that's mean. Oh, well, says Mike, that is the very same John Kerry who about four decades ago asked, how do you ask the last man to die in a war that's a mistake? Now being a man who asks the first man to die in a war that is a mistake to die for that, you know, mistake. Mike, I would say that is a that is one of the better crafted Moran Monday nominations that I have ever received. Absolutely, and thank you very kindly for it. It is well done and, well, not too terribly much I can really add to that. Because it's a fact, isn't it? We're going to make the mistake, aren't we? We're going. There are stupid things we could do in response to this attack on Paris, and we are going to hare-lip hell itself to make sure that we do it. We may have to sort through to make sure we find which mistake is the biggest mistake we can make, but we'll make it. Because Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, amen. Right. Yeah, sorry, that's just... So, nomination number one. And a couple of remarks. And just by way of thinking and processing through this, because that's what we do best. We are not right-wingers. We are not simply told to go forth and hate someone or go forth and burn someone's house down or go forth and bomb someone. So we naturally go, well, whoever said that must be right. Because we have what? Yes, functioning brains. Now, mind you, Mumblin' Ben, the Lion King, did over the weekend say that he wanted to, I don't know, kill some Syrians or something because he has big frontal lobes. I say where Ben's big frontal lobes are concerned, seeing is believing. Because I am not going to take his mental faculties on faith. I don't take anything on faith for that matter. By the way, we've got a lot of nominees to get to this evening. A bunch. But I got to thinking, and Saturday was kind of weird for me. Usually, during this time of year, Saturday sees me awakening all excited and examining the schedule to see who's going to play football that day. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, this past Saturday, my beloved Mountaineers managed to not snatch defeat from the jaws of victory and actually beat the University of Texas, I think, for the first time in their brief rivalry, taking us to 6-4 and qualifying by Jiminy for the Tidy Bowl. Probably. Whatever the worst possible bowl you could be in, we'll wind up in it. Yeah, we'll be lucky if the temperature at that bowl game, and it'll probably be at an outdoor venue, it goes anywhere above, 37 degrees or so. And we'll lose. I know Billable Rick hates it when I'm such a pessimist about my Mountaineers, but I've earned the right. But it was a big day, the tide continued to roll and beat up on Mississippi State. Yeah. Poor LSU. I reckon our dear friend Haley had something to celebrate because Arkansas just opened an uncharacteristic can of whoop ass on your Bayou Bengal Tigers there. It was at home. Quite surprising, and Stanford went down and UCLA took it on the chin, and right. But it upsets people when I talk about college sports, so I'll stop. But that's usually how I am on a Saturday. I woke up Saturday morning and it was nothing like that. And I woke up Saturday morning and it wasn't in me. I didn't care. I was thinking about what had happened in Paris just a few short hours prior. We talked about it as it unfolded, because it was unfolding during the program, in part. But I thought, and I was reminded of Winnie the Pooh sitting there with his little paw against his head going, think, 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 think. And the more I thought about things, the more I reached, I came to the conclusion that whatever the dumbest thing we can possibly do is, we will absolutely pour heart and soul into doing it. The French are leading the way, you know, bombing their way to peace. And I'm sure lots of us would like to, not us, not we in the Horn Family Commune Congregation, but lots of Americans would also like to bomb their way to peace because they think it can be done. But then I wondered further, do we really think it can be done, or do we just think that bombing something is all that can be done? And I wonder if that's not the truth. And then, of course, Saturday evening came around and the Democratic debate. The closer we got to it, the ickier I felt about it, because it felt like it was sort of soaked in blood. And I started feeling that way when I read a news story that said that the moderators had had to shift the focus of the debate because of what had happened in Paris a few scant hours earlier. And I took a little pushback, people saying, no, we need to do this. But, you know how I am about for-profit media. That was not, let's understand something right quick-like. If that debate in Iowa had been offered as a public service, it would not have been offered with commercial interruptions. Because commercials are opportunities for the network carrying the item to make a profit. And in exchange for running the advertisement, the purpose of the ad is for the advertising company also to make a profit. And so to the extent that they were going to be talking about the bombings in Paris and the attacks in Paris, they were going to be attempting to make a profit off of dead French and at least one American people. I suspect you're with me on so far. I mean, even if you don't agree, you at least understand my reasoning. So I felt kind of icky about it. I really never stopped feeling icky about it. More on the content of the debate, perhaps, the pageant. Just because they're Democrats doesn't mean it's not a pageant. This was an entertainment, just like all of the others. Utterly meaningless, absolutely without purpose, nothing. They were little campaign advertisements inside a thing that was supposed to be offered up as, you know, serious policy. Just please. Well, there's that. Yeah. Texas Betsy points out, but Bob, all news programming in the U.S. is for profit. Most countries do not have advertising on news shows. Between them, yes, not during them. Silly them, missing an opportunity to make all kinds of money on dead people. If it bleeds, it leads, right? But all day long, I had been thinking about the larger meaning of the attacks and our response, the French response, the NATO response, if there is one. And I just kept getting less and less comfortable. Because I couldn't see my way clear to where there was any military action that was going to solve anything resembling the problem at hand. And I even thought my way down through considering the idea of military action in the light most favorable to the proponents of said action. And so I thought about bombs, and I thought about, okay, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they get it all right, and they only bomb places of
some sort of strategic or military or tactical value. And then I thought about where I live. And I thought about the fact that the bombs, and they're bombs, it was Friday, as a matter of fact. It was Friday in the afternoon when I looked at Agnes, and Agnes looked at me because we had just heard this massive rumble. And in this neck of the woods, we all know what that means. It means a gigantic explosion sufficient to take away a chunk of a mountain had just taken place. And we know, for instance, by comparison, that those ammonium and fuel oil munitions that are used, explosives that are used, we know, for instance, that one little baby explosion on a mountaintop removal site can be the equivalent of like 25 cruise missiles at one time. And so we know that they don't deliberately, I mean, they don't just boom, drop a bomb on somebody's house. Now, I mean, every now and then a boulder will get loose and go galumphing down the mountain until it, lands in the crib of a 3-year-old. Right. But they don't do that on purpose. They limit their blasting to the mountaintop removal site. But what have we learned in the last 4 or 5 years about that? Well, we've learned that the dust that's kicked up by those explosions forms fine, microfine particles of poison that people are then unable to escape. It's inescapable to them, and they wind up taking it into their bodies, and those little particles of dust become things like cancer. Still with me? I suspect. So from there, I got to thinking about all that pinpoint precision bombing going on, and I realized that even if they do everything right, that somebody somewhere, and probably a lot of somebodies somewhere, are going to be breathing the poisonous detritus that comes from the explosions. Witness the number of people made grievously ill, for instance, by breathing the filth that was the fallout from the September 11th, 2001 attacks. We might recall that Dim Leader's EPA administrator at the time, a nasty human being by the name of Christy Todd Whitman, we might recall that she said that that air was perfectly safe to breathe. Of course, she was nowhere near anywhere that anyone would be breathing it. She did not announce that while breathing it. No, not at all. They don't do that. So I came to the conclusion that any of those bombings are going to have a toxic impact on innocent people, no matter how hard we try to limit, collateral damage. That obscene, Orwellian phrase for people that we kill, that we didn't mean to kill, and that we sort of feel bad about having killed, but figure kind of had to die anyway because there was a greater good to be had in killing them. Okay? I mean, I'm really not just rambling here. I'm trying to make some sense out of all of this. And I suspect that that's what a lot of us do after events like this. We try to make some sense out of it. We don't try to make some sense out of why people go and murder other people who are, by definition, innocent and civilians, because that way lies madness. But we try to make some sense out of, because we're liberals, because we're progressives, out of why these situations exist. How do these circumstances arise? And later on in the evening, I would put out a tweet and a Facebook post saying that the reason I support Bernie Sanders is because even though John Dickerson, that was his name, right, of CBS, who it was going to pull in a tasty paycheck for doing what he did and would go to the bank and cash it and never for a minute think about the fact that it was absolutely soaked in Parisian blood,
Even though John Dickerson, I mean, because it's just like that thing that I use for my signature line in my email account, the thing that Kurt Vonnegut said, a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Something with which I heartily agree. Which means that I'm either not a normal person, or I'm not functioning well, or I'm not on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society. I think it's the last part. I do hear my conscience. And I hear it dinning like a daggum bell in times like this. And I suspect many of us, dare I say all of us, in the Horn Family Commune congregation do. And I don't think it's because we're not normal. We might be normal is, after all, only a setting on a dryer, but we might be closer to it than most people. No, I think it's that upper levels part, because we're not. And so, as I started thinking about the revenge porn that we would get into, and probably at some point in time, crowds of Americans go, USA, USA, USA. When word got out of that the French had launched air attacks against these sites in Syria, did French people go out in the streets and chant, La France, La France, La France, La France, La France? I somehow don't think so. They haven't got quite that on top of this really scary nationalism at which the people of the United States are so very, very good, if good is the right word, accomplished, at which we are so accomplished. But John Dickerson asked Bernie, now that we've had these terrorist attacks on Paris, do you still think climate change is the most important national security threat? Huh? You commie? You sissy? You pinko? Do you still think that? Huh? To which, bless his heart, Senator Sanders responded, I certainly do. And I was proud of him in that moment, because that meant that he still had his eye on the ball. That meant that he still understood the overall overarching problem. And thus, at 37 minutes past the hour, 23 before the next one, here it is, as I understand it. After the Crusades, when Europe finally pulled back from that, when the people who lived in that region finally got to take their country back, ever heard? Yeah, didn't think of it that way before, did you? Me neither. The Middle East was really not, which is not the Middle East, it's Western Asia, please. But really wasn't much more than a blip to Western Europe and Northern Europe, and eventually to what would become the United States. It just didn't much matter. Especially once navigation developed to the point that one did not have to take the Silk Road to go and get black peppercorns, so that one's food would not simply taste like dirt. And maybe the occasional silk or some such, so that one did not simply have to walk around wearing coarsely woven burlap. Right. And we're talking about the upper levels of society. Those upper, that Vonnegut was talking about. Everybody else was still wearing burlap. I say, surf. Yeah, you get the idea. But the region just didn't mean that much to us
until lo and behold, in the wake of the development of the internal combustion engine, we found out that that region was sitting on a whole bunch of the stuff that ran internal combustion engines, to wit, oil, also known as fossil hydrocarbons. And suddenly they meant something to us. They meant money, wealth. And by us, I mean people like Royal Dutch Shell, what would later become BP, Standard Oil, you know, the Rockefellers, later becomes ExxonMobil, the usual suspects. And consequently, in the First World War, 100 years ago, it became strategically useful for us to break apart that empire known as the sick man of Europe, the Ottoman Empire, which we did. And a couple of guys, an Englishman and a Frenchman, the Englishman named Sykes and a Frenchman named Picot, quietly went about the business with no one else really knowing of sitting down over a map of Western Asia and saying, you know, just, you know, a protractor, a ruler, a couple of colored pencils, and saying, okay, when we've won the war and we've defeated Germany and Turkey and, you know, all their pals, France can have this and England can have this. That. And nothing has been okay since. Flash forward to the years after the Second World War, and you get the overturning of the democratically elected prime minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, in favor of Reza Pahlavi, a little thug whom we promptly perched on what is called the peacock throne. And it all goes to hell from there. Meanwhile, in that self-same 100-year window, the burning of those fossil hydrocarbons begins to take a most profound toll on our ability to live as a species on this planet. And in the ever-widening search for those fossil hydrocarbons, wherever we find it, we find trouble of one form or another. If it isn't the open slaughtering of people, then it's the ruination of the place where they live. If it's not murders by midnight in Nigeria, it's a liquored up captain yelling, yo-ho, 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 and running the Exxon Valdez aground. See where we're going with this? The more I thought about it, the more I realized that there's only one way to win the war on terror. You can't. There's nobody to bomb. There's nobody to machine gun. There's nobody to bunker bust. There's nobody to massacre. You can drone strike all the wedding receptions you want in the world, and it's not going to end. In fact, it will make worse the terrorism problem. There's only one way to solve this problem. And that is this. Get off oil. Get off coal. Get off gas. Oh, sure, there were wars all over this planet long before we used coal, oil, or gas. There's no getting around that. But those were wars fought for more traditional purposes, although in many instances, resources were involved. But climate change, and this is just a sort of little reminder, climate change remains the greatest threat to humanity on this planet, which is the only planet that has humanity, one might add. We are hydrocarbon burning our way right off of this planet with no way to get to another one. The climate change brought on by the general warming of the planet is forcing massive amounts of human migration, human suffering, poverty, and people in circumstances such as that are easily leveraged by the power, and it is tremendous power, of religion. But I go back to what I said Friday night. As odious as I think all organized religion is, and as odious in particular as I think the monotheistic Abrahamic religions are, as much the source of ever so much human suffering, beginning almost with the invention of writing, you can't hang all of this on religion. Religion is certainly fuel on the fire, gasoline, if you will. But if you look, if you drill down into, well, there's that drilling again, drill baby drill. If you drill down into the heart of any modern conflict, you don't find at the base religion. You find somebody who wants power and someone else who has it. And in that particular portion of the world, the way you leverage your attempt to gain power is to tell people that you have some sort of religious wisdom to impart to them. And that's how you wind up with people yelling Allahu Akbar. Or in English, God is great. Or Jesus saves. What have you. And so if you combine these two facts, you reach the inexorable conclusion, as I think Bernie elucidated nicely Saturday night, that we have to address climate change as the monstrous national security and global existential threat that it is. Think about it. If you want oil, you have to go where there's oil under the ground. And you have to figure out a way to take the oil from the people who live on top of that ground. This often engenders considerable ill feeling. What happens on every square millimeter of this planet? That's right. the sun shines. And what is sunshine? Why, like honey is pure, refined food energy, sunshine is pure electrical energy, potential electrical energy. I'm no physicist, and I don't pretend to be one. But the advantage to the fact that the sun shines everywhere is that it's free for the taking. Not even the taking, the having. On that day, when this nation and others become sustainable energy independent, we can turn our backs on that entire misbegotten corner of the world and, you know what, if Donald Trump wants to build a wall, he can build a wall around it and let them fight to their merry heart's content. Shia can fight Sunni. Sunni can fight Shia. They can both hate the Sufis. I care not. Actually, I do care. Because again, the other part of this problem is that people aren't sitting around in that portion of the world looking for somebody to be pissed off at and take a pot shot at, or bomb, or blast, or murder, or behead, or kill. People are the same the world over. They want to live, they want to eat, they want to rest, they want to procreate. They want to die with some sort of dignity. But whether it be Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE, any of these countries over there, they have their own version of the 0.1% who have all the wealth and 99.9% of people who haven't much. And they have that wealth because of oil. It came to me with a shocking degree of clarity. We can be free of this heartache. We can be free of this misery. We can be free of this violence and this grief. All we have to do is not need them anymore. Now, on the other hand, as Charlie Pierce pointed out earlier today, brilliantly, as he ever does, there are people over there who are the authors of much misery. But they're not necessarily the people we think they are. They are instead the people who run around doing things like kissing Republican presidents right smack dab on the mouth eater. I'm talking about our partners in peace, the Royal House of Ibn Saud. I'm not an advocate of bombing anyone, shooting anyone, stabbing anyone, garroting anyone, beheading anyone, murdering anyone, missiling anyone, nuking anyone. I'm an advocate of peace. But by Jove, I will speculate this far. If you want to bomb somewhere, bomb the Saudi Arabian Central Bank. Huh? Or maybe do something a little more creative and make all their digitized dollars go into a little place. Just cancel their debit cards, credit cards, lines of credit. You know what they'll do then? Why, they'll say, well, by God, you want to do that? Well, we'll just cut off your oil. And you know what the world could do then? Say, Well, I guess you forced us to do something we didn't want to do. To wit, become energy independent. Oh, sure, they might ramp up the attacks for a while, but it won't be because of anything we're doing there. We're ignoring them. Because that's also a bottom line out of all of this. They're sending attackers into places like Paris. Because as long as the attackers are busy in places like Paris, it means they're not setting off bombs in Riyadh. Or maybe Mecca. Curious, isn't it? But this whole line of inquiry began with me asking, of myself, mind you, why Paris? Really, why Paris? Oh, sure, the so-called terrorists, and the French have published a picture of one of them driving around in Paris in his funny hat. Was it a clue? But why Paris? Yes, Paris is an open society. Yes, Paris is secular. Yes, Paris does not dance to its former religiously strict fundamentalist inclinations as it did back when the French kings were the darlings of the Pope. But still, why Paris? London is no different in that regard. I'm not wishing ill on London. Hell, Krakow. Amsterdam. Frankfurt. Nah, we can't do Frankfurt. There's a lot of money that moves through there. Same thing with Zurich, so they're off the list. Berlin. Prague. Budapest. I mean, the Hungarians have been kind of nasty about this whole immigration thing. But the French maintained open borders. Why Paris? Why Paris? What's going to happen in Paris a scant month from now? Or what was scheduled to take place in Paris a scant month from now? That's right. The world had planned to come together to seek solutions and come to agreements on how to forestall the climate change that poses the single greatest existential threat to humanity on the planet. That's why Paris, who have been a long-time funder of ISIS, ISIL, Daesh. Why, look, our partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis, whose primary source of vast amounts of wealth is, why, yes, fossil hydrocarbons, the very thing that is poisoning us right off the planet. Now, I'm sure if you were to put this theory to the test of offering it to any high-minded governmental official, that man is obviously insane. He is not a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society like me. But to me, it seemed an inescapable conclusion. Why Paris? Because Paris was about to become the epicenter for a potential birth of freedom that this world has not known since the first drop of oil was pumped out of the geographical area surrounding the Persian Gulf. That's why Paris. That's why not Oslo. That's why not Rome. Although, as a caveat to all of this, Beirut was the recipient of vicious bombings on the same day, within hours. Facebook didn't offer anyone the opportunity to superimpose a transparency of the Lebanese flag with the cedar of Lebanon on it over their avatar. Months back, when more people were killed in Kenya by the same operative group than were killed in Paris, there was no opportunity proffered for people to do an overlay of the Kenyan flag onto their avatar. It's hard not to note that. It's hard not to be aware of that. All people are equal. All terrorism victims are equal. But, some terrorism victims are, more equal than other terrorism victims. But why Paris? That's why Paris. That's why. And thus we have reached the end of the filibobster for this Moran Monday. We have many more nominees on the way, because in the response to what happened in Paris, in my father's house are many Morans, and we're going to find a bunch of them. Kind of hard to miss. Randy informs me that, no, leaving the soccer stadium in France, people there were singing the Marseillaise. Doesn't quite have the same sort of caveman brutal force of USA, USA, USA. Kill you dead, kill you dead, kill you dead. So thank you very kindly to Randy for getting us started this evening. We have another $150 to go. And remember, Tony and Chico has a challenge on the table. The next 10 new subscribers get their first month's contribution doubled. The next 10 $10 a month subscribers get their contribution doubled the first month by Tony and Chica. Thanks again, Tony. So a little break. Lines are open, of course, for Moran Monday nominations. 304-574-8178 is line one. Line two is the stress line, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn. It's all quite easy, really. You can also reach me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid, on Facebook, Bob Kincaid, and email bobkincaid@gmail.com. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Oh, the engine's gone dead, cried the men who were there. And ship passed up the dock on the wide Delaware. Then the ship ran aground and the oil got away. And they did not report the big spill on that day. It was hundreds of thousands of gallons galore, stretching 32 miles down the Delaware shore. There were geese in the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crude. And it's oil, oil. They're drifting to the sea. Oil, oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket shores was a ship run aground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime. As it poured out a slick stretching into the tide, over 100 miles. Yes, it came deep, it came wide, and it's oil, oil, oh, pouring in the sea. Oil, oil, oh, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. There's talk of some writing found in the ship's log, saying one of the helmsman's unfit for his job. And the ship's gyro compass was 6 degrees shy. Their charts were outdated, but they tried to get by. And you know it's oil. Yeah, pouring in the sea. Oil, oil, oil. Don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah. Many more got registered in through Liberian doors. Inspections are quick and regulations are few. Just sign on the line and go find you a crew. Yes, one of these ships was the Olympic Games. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. Well, it's sad, but it's true. Things got worse for the seas. So I ain't even mentioned Amoco Cadiz. Amoco Cadiz between England and France. The big super tanker out there taking its chance with his 100,000 black tons of the slime. Amoco Cadiz spilled the most of all times. Yes, you know it's oil. Oil. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Now down in the Gulf, east of Mexico way, there's something gone wrong, so the papers all say. A Mexican oil well is leaking its goo. They say it's the worst that things have ever come to. Yes, it's gallons of sludge, 60 million and more. It's cruising and oozing towards many a shore. Yes, things have got bad, but they'll probably get worse. If you can't drink the oil, oh, you might die of thirst. Because it's oil, it's oil, and it's creeping in the sea. Oil, oil, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be.
Seemed appropriate. Steve Forbert and the Oil Song. Thanks to Carol Baker for, well, it's kind of an act of faith on her part that we will make it through the next 1 hour and 48 minutes without saying, yeah, that word. But come on, we can do it. Let's run over to the Skype line where Betsy awaits. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Well, you know, I mean...
Yeah, well, okay. Sorry, dumb question. So, I want to talk about refugees for a minute.
Sure. You deal with them on a fairly regular basis.
Pretty much all day, every day. Yeah, so, I don't know if people are aware of the difference between refugees and immigrants, or how it is that refugees actually get here. And I mean, is that something that's commonly known?
I don't think it is. And in fact, you know, we've had the discussion in the past, and I've asked the question in terms of Europe and people escaping the hell on earth in Syria and Western Iraq. They prefer to be called immigrants and not refugees. But no, I mean, it has a meaning in law, does it not?
Right. So here we actually tend to use the word refugees because it tells us a lot more about what programs they're with, what benefits they have, and how they came to get that label. So there's no one in America who's called a refugee officially who did not get originally that classification from the United States government, or I'm sorry, from the United Nations first. There's an organization called UNHCR, which is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and they're the people who decide who actually gets refugee status. There's 50 million people with that status in the world right now, which is kind of a large number.
Well, yeah, I mean, any time you try to put 50 million people anywhere.
Right. So if they're from a country where it's not Iraq and Afghanistan, Iraq and Afghanistan are their own thing, but every place else, the that every place else, they end up in the United States by happenstance, lottery, whatever. 100,000 refugees are settled every year. The United States accepts more than half of those. Again, I'm not including Iraq and Afghanistan right now. And that is entirely, well, it's not entirely by lottery. Some of it is if people have relatives in a country, then they end up there. They can end up there. Otherwise, it's pretty much random. But then there's the next step is our State Department does all kinds of interviews, background checks, medical checks, screenings of a million different kinds. And it can take 6 months to a year once they're accepted to come into the United States before they actually get to the United States. We've been told since, I want to say June, that we're getting Syrians. So far, there's 9 in my school district. I don't know.
Well, now, from a practical...
I give you, when I talk kids, I have absolutely no idea how many adults I'm talking about. I'm talking about pre-K to 12.
But from a practical standpoint, when the designation has been made,
yes,
how do they get here? Who takes care of the travel costs?
Either the United Nations or the host country. Often the United, if it's the United Nations, well. There's a number of circumstances under which they might actually have to pay it back within 10 years. I don't know what percent have to pay it back within 10 years.
God forbid it should just be free, right?
Right. Well, so here's the rub. The kids I work with, 80% are Afghanistan and Iraq, which I'll explain that system because it's completely different. Those families are coming in because of promises that we're actually keeping, that we made to these people. These are, by and large, the children of interpreters, the children of translators, the
collaborators.
The collaborators. These are the people who cooked in the embassy kitchen. And we made a specific promise to them that we would take care of them when we left. And
similar to Vietnam.
Right. My classroom is filled with those kids. That's who I teach, by and large. I also teach a whole bunch of kids from Africa, none of whom identify with the same country that is on their paperwork. When we found out that they were coming, we were given a list of names and ages and educational histories, which were somewhat accurate, of all of these kids and told that they were from Democratic Republic of the Congo. As it turns out, only one was born there, and not a single one actually identifies that as their country. They will tell you the country that they fled to, which is where most of them were born, as their country.
But their parents.
Their parents are all DRC. But when the kids were, we did immigration stories. When the kids were looking for pictures, they also did an identity book at the beginning of the year. Anytime they're looking for pictures, anytime they're introducing themselves to a classroom visitor, it never includes DRC. It's Rwanda, Burundi, or Uganda.
Which have their own problems.
They do. They do.
And could that be part of the motivating force behind not saying, well, you know, why don't you just stay in, you know, Rwanda, Burundi, or Uganda?
Right. So of the kids in those places, we have 6 right now. Only one of them lived in a village. Two. One family lived in a village. The other 4 that we have were all in refugee camps. So they were not living a regular, normal life that they can keep on forever.
Let me ask you this. I had a story last week about an El Salvadoran family facing deportation because the mother was too ashamed to talk about the fact that they faced, you know, death. Back in El Salvador because her 10-year-old son had been harassed as being gay. And they were, of course, being kept in an immigration concentration camp for families.
Yeah, we got 3 of those in Texas.
Yeah, well, I mean, so but that doesn't happen for the families of the people who come from Afghanistan, Iraq, They just get they get cleared and they get settled. Is that it?
Right. Once they're cleared and settled, they can they get supported. So then everything goes through more localized agencies, many of which are somewhat religious in nature, which is its own problem. But most of which, from what I've seen, are excellent. My kids all go through Caritas. In fact, a lot of them don't know the word refugee, but they will tell you that they did something with their Caritas volunteer.
And Caritas is?
Our local refugee resettlement agency.
Okay, I was going to ask, is it an effort of the Roman Catholic Church? I mean, I hear Latin so, and.
Yes, I don't know where. I'd have to look it up. I do know that they have a Christian bent and that they've been excellent as far as these kids are concerned. When I used to get kids 10 years ago, I've been doing this for a very long time. 10 years ago, the bulk of my students came through Methodist Ministries of West Africa through to Caritas on this end. So my guess would be it's Methodist, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, so when they if they come through that agency there in Texas, is it foreordained? Sorry about the word. That they're going to settle in Texas?
Yes and no. If that's who they come through, then that's where their first place will be. But if they get a job out of state and they're still within 2 years of arrival, then they will switch to another one. So we got a kid here last March who was originally, they went through Baltimore, Maryland. The father found work in Texas, and so they switched to being under Caritas, and she moved into the different housing because they came through a different program, but attending the same school.
So the reason I asked about the settlement is obviously we have a cadre of miserable, merciless, sorry.
And 99% of what's online is wrong, and I'll tell you why.
Well, I was going to say governors who have declared, well, we're not going to have any of those Syrians here and fill in the blank.
Right. My governor's one of them.
Your governor's one of them. Bobby yeah. Jindal.
Yeah. Alabama, Kansas.
Yeah. Oh, and of course, in Alabama, what is particularly repugnant about it is that Robert Bentley, who is the governor of Alabama, and apparently a profound adulterer, by the way, and upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian, has declared that there won't be no Syrian refugees in Alabama.
Right. So here's the problem with that. They don't get to decide. The State Department decides. And it, a lot of it is based on which states have refugee health services. That's one of the biggest determinants on where they go, is where is there a refugee health services clinic to take care of them. I mean, it sounds silly, but that's and then which states have agencies that have capacity, which states are not maxed out on housing, things like that.
Yeah, but to hear these clowns say it, you would think that there was just a bus that drove through Syria and picked up people willy-nilly and took them to the nearest airport and just, you know, flew them right into Birmingham.
So then you got Alternet and Common Dreams and all of these places coming out and saying, okay, the governors can't do this. It's not their purview. This is nothing to worry about. It's just posturing. But that's not right either. Because Medicaid and food stamps, no, I'm sorry, food stamps is national. Medicaid and one of the other programs that they're eligible for, they are legal immigrants. They get green cards within a year of arrival. The adults get green cards almost immediately. The kids get Social Security cards. The kids have green cards within a year.
Is there a path to citizenship?
Yep, 5 years.
And does it do all the usual rules apply? Learn English, pass the test, all of that stuff?
Yes. Yes, all of those rules apply, but also because of schooling systems in different parts of the world, a student who has not graduated high school must be enrolled in school until their 18th birthday. So the dropout rate in our state is 17, unless you're a refugee, in which case it's 18.
So if mom and dad, meanwhile, are, let's say that you're there, let's say you're, okay, let me do the math real quick. Let's say you're 10.
Yes.
And mom and dad, you've been here for 5 years, you're 15, mom and dad pass their citizenship test.
You become a citizen.
You do become a citizen.
Yes, you do.
Okay. But you still have to stay in school until you're 18.
I don't know. I'm talking about the kids who are coming at 16.
Okay.
The kids who are coming at 16 who will turn 18 before the 5 years cannot get citizenship unless they stay in school till their 18th birthday.
Well, this cadre of cads, Greg Abbott, Asa Hutchinson, Mike Pence, Bobby Jindal, who's the idiot in Michigan, and of course Robert Bentley in Alabama. We're Christians. We don't want it. We don't want any Syrians. Like I said, they act as though, you know, it's just some sort of floodgate, but it's not. We're talking about 10,000 people, which isn't even a good sized city in West Virginia.
Right. So we get. Let me
finish, if I may. What kind of vetting process takes place before they're ever allowed to board the plane?
A tremendous vetting process. United Nations does their vetting, and then our State Department does vetting. That's why it takes them a year from the time they get the classification, 6 months to a year, until they actually show up on our shores.
How is this different? And I'm trying to shine a light here. And I'm, as Carol said, you're a teacher tonight. Carol says she's my teacher.
Thank you.
She also added, and if they can't get into Alabama, that's just merciful. But in terms of, if we think back to September 11th, 2001, and what led up to it, and of course all the things that the Bush administration ignored, you had people who were over here on student visas, and I guess work visas, who were learning how to take off in planes, but not how to land them. And never mind why that didn't really just set off any alarm bells. But is the vetting process more intensive for refugees?
Much more intensive. I mean, anybody can get us, not anybody, but as long as you don't have a criminal background, you can get a student visa. You prove that you finished high school, you have a university accepting you, or a trade school or a vocational school, and you have a reason for studying in the United States, it's pretty easy to get. This is far more thorough.
Carol tells me the governor of Massachusetts has added his name to the no Syrians list as well. Beautiful.
Great.
And here in West Virginia, of course, we have a nominally Democratic governor. But that doesn't mean that a good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding, Christ-centered Christian member of the House of Delegates hasn't immediately begun beating the drum saying, well, don't let them into West Virginia. They'll ruin everything.
So,
which is moderately hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, you and I talked, texted while you were on air on Friday that my sixth graders had their very first middle school dance which is more party than dance. They're not actually, it's not, the eighth grade dance is a whole different ballgame. The sixth grade dance is just a party, and there's activities, and there's food, and they play soccer in the gym, and it's a good time.
Yeah, because otherwise, if it was sixth grade and it was a dance, all the girls would stand along one wall, and all the boys would stand along
the
other.
That's the eighth grade dance.
Okay. Well, there we go.
That's the eighth grade dance. But I was really worried about my kids walking home because I have five who wear hijab. And just with the tensions on Friday. And honestly, the tensions since then, although they don't, that's the only time they walk home in the dark, would be for something
like that. And just for clarity's sake, in case people don't know, there is a difference between hijab and niqab and burqa.
Okay, so one is niqab because her scarf covers her shoulders. The rest are hijab. It is just a scarf that, for most, all but one, covers the neck. And then I have one who is a sixth grader who's only been wearing it since she started school this year. She was too young to have to wear it before. And she plays with the thing all day long. The scarf is on, the scarf is off, the scarf is on. She ties it, she unties it. She's ridiculous. And, you know, I could see her walking home without it because it fell on the street. But
Do you have any fears of, like, her being beaten when she gets home for not having?
No, I don't.
Okay.
One of the eighth grade girls, when she sees her, turns into Mother Hen and tucks it in for her, ties it and tucks it in for her, which lasts about 10 minutes. So it's amusing.
And you know, and I'm not trying to be insensitive here, but I guess there's no way for me not to. You know how I feel about having to wear the special headgear. I don't think anybody should be beaten or killed or stomped or harassed or cussed
for wearing it or for not wearing it.
Right. But no, your fears were well grounded, because how far is Pflugerville from where you are?
10 miles.
I seem to recall you worked in Pflugerville.
Yeah, I left this district for 2 years in one of the least wise decisions of my lifetime, and spent time teaching in Pflugerville.
And so Pflugerville has an Islamic center. And,
yes,
of course, in Merca, you have to call it an Islamic center because people would have a conniption if you called it a mosque.
I believe it's like a Jewish community center, meaning that it has the mosque and the school in the same area.
Right, but, you know, ixnay on the askme, you know, it's X's tay.
I'm pretty sure that the sign says under it that it is both the school and the mosque.
Okay. But anyway, whoever it is that opens the doors of the Pflugerville Islamic Center went to open the said doors and then thought better of it.
Yeah.
Because the doors, because this is America, and we've got a First Amendment that guarantees religious tolerance, the doors of the mosque had been smeared. And I don't understand what it is with the right-wingers and the feces. Maybe it has something to do with their fascination with the potty generally, as evidenced by Houston's vote that we talked about with Blake, last week? But the doors to the mosque had been smeared with feces.
Right.
I guess we can take it as a sort of, at least they didn't draw swastikas with it like they did in Missouri.
Yeah. I'm afraid for my kids. I really am. Last year we had a couple of incidents of kids saying not nice things to one of the Arabic boys. And September 11th, we talk to the kids a day or two ahead and say, it is entirely possible that someone may say something nasty to you. Here's, you know, you'd come tell us, you tell the assistant principal, you don't fight. You tell us, you let us deal with it. We are the adults.
And you are in a responsive school where something will actually be done.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And we've had kids who are not refugees. We've had kids who are Lebanese and have been here since they were three, or who whose parents are from Iran and they have an Iranian last name, but they're as American as you are, saying, being told, you called 9/11, go back home.
Well, and look, to say Iranian last name, even, I mean, yeah, come on, your average knuckle walking, mouth breathing, floor rolling, serpent handling, strychnine swilling, et cetera, American wouldn't know an Iranian last name from a Jordanian last name, from a Palestinian last name, from a Lebanese last name.
Right.
Because we're just not that into knowing stuff. At least not knowing stuff about the wider world. You know, I've got Carol sent me a copy of a tweet here that's quite fast. Well, it's just perfect. From Oliver Willis. And he said, if only we had a seasonally appropriate story about Middle Eastern people seeking refuge being turned away by the heartless.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because the if there's some sort of mathematical measure of heartlessness, it's pegging the meters right now. I mean, you've got a libertarian ophthalmologist, Rand Paul, who has declared that he's going to introduce legislation that will ban visas for refugees escaping from terrorists.
Right.
And what happened to those libertarian values of live and let live? His bill will put an immediate moratorium on U.S. visas. And the thing is, if he does that, what do you want to bet that he's got a fighting chance of getting more than 60 votes on it? In other words, getting past the cloture.
Not good at all. I mean, good odds, not good for kids, not good for families.
Yeah, bad thing, but real good chance. I mean, the entire Republican Party will vote for it, so that's what, 54?
I don't even know anymore.
And then all you need is, say, Joe Manchin.
The pretend Democrats.
Yeah, the phony baloney Democrats. And bang, there you are at 60. It'll go through the House. 66 is 2/3. And then hopefully Barack Obama would say, you know, this is pretty sickening, and veto it. And I say that because Barack Obama delivered a pretty serious condemnation of Jebya. I don't know if you caught that or not, but he referred to, let me see, I've got the audio here. Stand by, let's just listen to the president for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay. And when I hear folks say that, well, maybe we should just admit the Christians, but not the Muslims. When I hear political leaders suggesting that there would be a religious test for which person who's fleeing from a war-torn country is admitted, when some of those folks themselves come from families who benefited from protection when they were fleeing political persecution, that's shameful. That's not American. That's not who we are. We don't have religious tests to our compassion. When Pope Francis came to visit the United States and gave a speech before Congress, he didn't just speak about Christians who were being persecuted. He didn't call on Catholic parishes just to admit those who were of the same religious faith. He said, protect people who were vulnerable. And so I think it is very important for us right now, particularly those who are in leadership, particularly those who have a platform and can be heard, not to fall into that trap, not to feed that dark impulse inside of us. You know, I had a lot of disagreements with George W. Bush on policy, but I was very proud after 9/11 when he was adamant and clear about the fact that this is not a war on Islam. And the notion that some of those who have taken on leadership in his party would ignore all of that . That's not who we are. On this, they should follow his example. It was the right one. It was the right impulse. It's our better impulse. And whether you are European or American, the values that we are defending, the values that we're fighting against ISIL for, are precisely that we don't discriminate against people because of their faith. We don't kill people because they're different than us. That's what separates us from them. And we don't feed that kind of notion that somehow Christians and Muslims are at war. And if we want to be successful defeating ISIL, that's a good place to start, by not promoting that kind of ideology, that kind of attitude. In the same way that the Muslim community has an obligation not to in any way excuse anti-Western or anti-Christian sentiment, we have the same obligation as Christians. And it is good to remember that the United States does not have a religious test, and we are a nation of many peoples of different faiths, which means that we show compassion to everybody. Those are the universal values we stand for. And that's what my administration intends to stand for. All right? Thank you very much, everybody.
So, Bob, I was with him right until the end.
Which part?
I forget exactly how he phrased it, but he said that we as Christians do not stand for.
Well, he was saying he wasn't leaving people out. He's at a point in his presidency where he just does little things to stick his thumb in the right wing's eye. Because you know, when he said George W. Bush said something right, you know, if W was sitting there on his cul-de-sac somewhere near Dallas, hey, Laura, the Kenyan Muslim said something. He said I'd done something right. Lock the doors; they'll be here any minute. I think in that, to that extent, he was speaking for we Christians, which does not include me.
Right, nor me.
I agree. Now, when he said we do not have a religious test, that's a back reference to the Constitution.
Yes.
When it says we will have no religious test for holding office.
Right.
Because, after all, Pennsylvania was founded by Quakers. Maryland, as the name might indicate, was founded by Catholics. We've had some religious tests.
Yes.
But still, the impulse is right. And, yeah, there's a cynic in me who also acknowledges that there's a little bit of disingenuity in there, insofar as referencing that George W. Bush said this was not a war against Islam. What do you say to the man who is carrying the corpse of his broken-boned 4-year-old out of the rubble well, yeah, I mean, she's dead, and we did it, but it's not because you're a Muslim.
Right.
I mean, is the grieving father just supposed to shake that off and go, oh, well, okay, I mean, as long as it's not because I'm a Muslim.
It's interesting. I'm going to end on a positive note, I think.
Okay.
Before we started writing immigration stories, we started reading immigration stories. And in this country, pretty much all of the picture book immigration stories are written about 100 years ago. I mean, they're written about events that people who emigrated 100 years ago.
People passing through Ellis Island.
Yes. So Ellis Island appears several times in the book. And one of the books, they saw all of these women wearing scarves because, of course, there were not a lot of showers on these boats. And so, you know, and women just wore scarves in Europe in those days. And both of my classes, the reaction in both classes was, oh, look, they're Muslim. Oh, look, they're dressed like a girl sitting across the table from them. Which I thought was very cute. And I had to explain, no, if they're coming from Italy, probably not.
Yeah, that would be the Mantilla?
Yes, yeah, but they were sort of excited to see it. Well, I was like, well, okay, not, you know. And I ended up giving them a little bit about the history of shampoo, but that's neither here nor there.
Look, teachable moments.
Absolutely. But it was fascinating because
I mean, if you know that history, why is it shampoo? At one point in time, were people putting real poo on their heads?
Only at the mosque in Pflugert. No, they were not.
Okay, because that's right up there with my eternal. You know, there are questions I will eventually have answered, and the other one has to do with molasses. What do they do with the rest of the mole?
Oh, great.
Oh, come on.
The shampoo one was better.
Tough crowd.
Yes.
Well, no, really, this has been quite enlightening, and I do appreciate it. And, you know, it is well that we should remember that while if we talk about refugees, Syrian refugees, we understand that the right-wingers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, baggers, tenthers, deathers, booger eaters, we understand that they think of some guy with a scimitar in his teeth and a dynamite belt around his waist, running through Walmart screaming Allahu Akbar. But in many instances, and perhaps even most instances, what we're talking about are children.
Yeah. Yes. So approximately half of at least the refugees from Iraq, approximately half of them are children. Which is worth considering. Anyway, on the Horn Facebook group, I put a link to my students' immigration stories.
Oh, neat.
And I've removed names, and in one case, I changed the name of a country. Not by much.
Okay. Well, I think people will probably enjoy getting a look at that. I really appreciate all of that.
Well, they have to read through first-year students' English, because it's largely in their own words.
But I love the cognitive studies that have been done on that. You can usually dope it out.
Yes.
If you get, like, two letters out of a word, you can usually sort it out.
So with my kids, you have to say it out loud, and then you'll hear where the CH and the J switched. Or LIDEL. You have to say it out loud before you understand what they're trying to say.
I think people will probably enjoy reading those, and I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And thank you. And thank you for, as always, dealing with this issue intelligently and not from a reactionary type of standpoint.
Well, I'm just so glad I'm not that person.
Yeah.
I've got a lovely example of it, and we'll deal with that at some point in the program, probably. But thanks and good luck, and keep us posted on, because you'll probably be, well, unless the Republicans get their way and just say, eh, what that really means is let the little children suffer, you'll probably be seeing more of them.
Right. It's the we were told originally that there were 200 in Austin, or 200 who had come through Houston, of whom some number would end up in Austin. And what that boiled down to for us was 9 school children, none of whom are in my class. They're too young or too old or living in South Austin.
At some point, they probably will. Thank you kindly.
Right. All right. Bye.
Have a good night. Bye.
You too.
And that's what I mean when I say that the purpose of conversation radio is to allow people to be the experts that they are instead of relying on some booker to go out and find an expert. That's the beauty of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, is that people are experts in their own lives. Every last one of us, to some degree or another. By the way, while that call was underway, just so you'll know if you're listening, while that call was underway, a call was coming in from someone in the 269 area code. If you want to try again, you are welcome to do so. In the meantime, let's go over to the stress line and check in with Jim out in Nevada Stan. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
Yeah, your analysis is just right on. You know, it's just straight to the point. You know, I made me think, and I was thinking different things, but I was thinking, you know, we would have done what Carter, you know, wanted to do in the 78. Hello?
Yeah, right here.
Okay. You know, just focus on alternative energy more. We wouldn't be in this mess. I mean, we're 78, that's what, 30, almost 30 years of technological development of getting off of oil and, you know, going for solar and wind. You know, imagine how much further we'd be. But that's not going to happen because the people who really control things, they like making their money off oil.
Let's remember why Jimmy Carter wanted to do that, Jim. There was an immediacy of memory there. And what I mean by that is the first Arab oil embargo was 1973. And then they did it to us again in what, 1975?
I think.
And in neither instance had we had not lifted a finger against Saudi Arabia or any of the other petroleum producing states. I mean, this is well before Bush War I or Bush War II. It was a naked assertion of power. And while people may say things like, well, you know, the American people are spoiled, you know, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay. But it put a real hardship on real people. You know, I'm old enough to remember the gas lines. I think we talked about this a little bit maybe a week ago or so. I remember the gas lines. I remember. I remember the abject shock of American citizens when, for the first time ever, gasoline crossed $1 a gallon, and that was gasoline crossing $1 a gallon, and people's employers didn't give a good damn that it had, or how much more of the take home pay it was consuming. And for somebody who was literally a nuclear scientist sitting in the White House, the answer was actually pretty plain. We have to get free of this stuff. With the purest use of the word free. I mean, we would, in a nation that was solarized and wind-powered, where we were devoting the technological drive into the storage capacity and storage technology that we devoted to the Apollo moon project, in a country that did that, and then could thumb its nose at the oil-producing world, it might be something closer to freedom than anybody has ever experienced in the relatively short history of this country. I mean, Marty sent me an email a little bit ago saying, remember, oil is used for things other than transportation. It absolutely is. Where do you think Velveeta comes from? But that's, you know, getting off of oil as a propellant fuel cannot possibly be a bad idea. How's that a bad idea, Jim? For anybody except the CEO of ExxonMobil, et cetera.
Exactly. And I was thinking if we would have gone to a Manhattan Project style mission to get off of oil and develop, you know, like I said, you know, wind, solar, blah, 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 all those other options. But no, it's just how do we get more oil? It's just like this thing with the Canadian oil sludge. Oh, well, we can get that. Yeah, but that creates, 66% or some ridiculous amount more pollution. And never mind that. We need that oil instead of trying to look for something else. And like I said, go back to, I don't know, 78 was when Carter, that's the day I seem to draw out of my head, when Carter proposed getting off of energy. And, you know, I remember he got nothing but ridicule and, you know, that was crazy to a lot of, especially right-wingers. Of course, you know where they're coming from.
Honest to God, Jim, I don't necessarily know where they're coming from. I know they're crazier than a sprayed roach.
Well, they only care as long as they're getting money off of it, which they're getting tons of it. And that would, I guess, take away some of their power, you know?
Well, I mean, look, is it... And I'm constantly being tested and tried on things like this. I did not think it was possible for me to despise Mike Huckabee more than I already did. But the man in regard to, and Carol just shared this with me, in regard to the issue of Syrian refugees, and, you know, they're all going to come over here and turn our Wally worlds into heaps of smoke and rubble because they hate freedom. He said, I'm not kidding, it's time to wake up and smell the falafel. And then he said, then he went so far as to say that if brand new shiny Speaker of the House, zombie-eyed Granny Starver, Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan, doesn't move immediately to block Syrian refugees, that he should resign as the Speaker of the House. Using an epithet like him is too easy, because then you have to start thinking about with what? Red hot poker? Or, you know, would it be more appropriately to do it with a white hot poker? I mean, it's disgusting the things that emanate from the gob holes that pass for mouths in these these right wing puddles of excrescence. I mean, and it's happening all over the country, Jim. We talked about Pflugerville, Texas. There, yeah, smearing a mosque door in feces, really. But then there's Amir El Masri, who lives in Orange County, Florida. They didn't smear feces on his door. somebody came by and fired their freedom protector into his home. Sometime between 8 and 10 a.m. on Sunday. And the poor man is forced to say, we are as peaceful as any American family. I mean, why would you shoot at my garage? Well, when is that man and his family, when are they ever going to feel safe again? And here's a fun part. Where in this country? I mean, if right now they got busy, Jim, and packed up bag and baggage and moved, to where? To where in this country is there not some miserable, violent religious bigot? You know, this goes back to what I've been asking for a couple of weeks now. What would happen if you went to an embassy and said, I'm seeking asylum in your country because the United States of America is too dangerous for me and there's nowhere here I can feel safe from random firearms violence? This guy's probably got a better claim on the notion than pasty-faced, doughy, 50-plus-year-old I do, but it's still the same principle. And that's not the only one. It's going on all over the country. Jesus, God, and not just in this country. A man was arrested in London for trying to throw a Muslim woman in front of an oncoming underground metro train. What in the hell? But by the same token, are we shocked? You there, Jim?
Yeah. No, it's just crazy. It's like instead of trying, I guess it's just the negative side of human emotion or the human ego that they don't look for the real answer. They look for some either superstitious or some easy answer, which isn't always the case. You know.
But then again, you know, who are the people who are telling these people that they're Christians? I mean, there's no sense in trying to save this for prayer meeting Wednesday because it's more topical for Moran Monday. What's his name? Greg Anderson. He's the Baptist minister. He said the people who went to the concert in Paris, performed by the Eagles of Death Metal, which is not a death metal band, they had it coming.
Well, if those people had I'm sure gone to whatever church, that person or those people who think like that, if they'd just gone there, they would have been safe, you know? If they would have just adopted their philosophy, basically, you know, they wouldn't have to worry about that because their Lord would have protected them.
I mean, this just... the creepy bastard really said they had it coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you take that point of view, why have laws? I mean, because if everything's just the way it should be, then why even, you know, fight it? You know, it's just like it with illness. Well, then you're getting into, I keep on going there, but it's almost like you're getting into, determinism and, you know, basically, one of my favorite rants, you start going down that Calvinism thing. Well, that's why you're suffering that, and it's God's will, you know, and, you know, why fight it? If you carry it to the nth degree, I mean, isn't that the final analysis? That's why you have that problem, because you were a bad soul. You weren't pure. I mean, that's the whole drive behind most religions, especially the Abrahamic religions. I figured, you know, when you get to the bottom of it.
And again, I'm not the guy to look to for a rousing defense of religion.
You're not? I got the wrong number, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all too easy. People say, you know, religion does this. No, religion fuels the flame. Religion does not strike the spark. But I think my theory is borne out in the case of what we're witnessing from the mouths of the ignoranti here in the United States. They're not stupid because of religion. Religion gives them a greater voice for their stupidity.
You see the
distinction?
Yeah, it gives them more power. It's not whether it's really true or not. It's just, hey, I can get more power.
Joel Osteen is not fueled by some desire to save souls. Joel Osteen is fueled by a desire to have mansions and jets and yachts.
Yeah, that stupid, goofy look on his face. Yeah, you're right. That is stupid. And it's self-righteous crap. God, it drives me up the wall.
Yeah, I don't know. No kidding.
I used to be able to watch a little bit of it as a goof, but I kind of like I used to be able to watch Fox as a goof, but I just can't.
Not me either. I can't. There's no joy in it. All the ha ha's gone out of it. At most I can run an occasional clip here.
Yeah, well, it's reached the point where it's just you kind of almost end up having an argument with your TV if I watch it. It's just
I'm just at a place in my life where I refuse to scream at the television. I'm not nearly old enough to be doing that yet.
Yeah, I got 20, 25, 30 years maybe left, and why do I want to waste time doing that?
Then again, there are two things I can watch on television that will make me yell Jesus Christ. that's a Jimmy Swaggart program and a Mountaineer football game.
Well, I could watch the Saints.
There you go, you get it. Hey, Jim, good talking to you, man.
What's that?
I said, good talking to you. Have yourself a good evening.
All right, have a good one.
All right, bye now.
Great show.
Thank you. Our buddy Jim in Nevada stand. And let's run back over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I am well, thank you.
This is Heather.
That's what I thought.
On FYI Nation.
Yes.
And I popped in while you were speaking to the lady that you were speaking to earlier.
Yes.
This is depressing. This is really depressing to me. I am 44 years old. I was taught in elementary school. Our country is supposed to be welcoming. You know, we are, you know, this is not the America I was taught about when I was growing up. I'll just say that, and I'm pissed.
Okay, elaborate on that. What isn't, I mean, are you sure about that, Heather? Are you sure this is not that America? You sure maybe somebody wasn't lying to you when you were a kid? You know, we do tell children rather a long laundry list of lies. Santa Claus.
Well, maybe it was the long laundry list of my mother. I do remember somebody saying years ago when I was a little kid, all I remember was we're supposed to be opening and our country is supposed to be welcoming. We are, you know.
Give me your tired, your poor, that Emma Lazarus poem. Is that what we're talking about?
What?
The Emma Lazarus poem, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Yes, that.
Yeah.
I think that may be it, but I always thought about that, and it's like,
go back home, 9/11.
Exactly.
Speaking of 9/11, are you familiar with that Family Guy clip where Lois is running for political office?
I love that.
I never thought I would actually see an American politician reprise that clip in real time in human form until I sat down and watched the debates on Saturday.
Oh, Hillary, honey, it's just not. Let's not go there.
Of course, I take millions of dollars from Wall Street. 9/11.
Oh, but someone else somebody that I was listening to while I was watching it. Actually, I had the TV on mute and I was listening to it, and someone who helps with some stuff on FYI Nation was talking about that clip or that scene from Family Guy when Lois was running for office. And ever since I've seen that, I think, oh, crap. And it just, but yeah, that Saturday, that Hillary doing that reminded me of that for sure.
And that line where she tried to get snarky and say, "Well, Senator Sanders is impugning my integrity." See, that was the moment where I understood that Senator Sanders is a great politician, and I never will be, because I would be completely unable to control myself and turn to her and say, "Well, you know, if the shoe fits."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because the argument she was making, once you unpack that whole thing, is I can take millions of dollars from Wall Street and still have integrity. Well, okay, if you're gonna make the argument that you take millions of dollars from Wall Street, but you still don't kick kittens, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought I would see anybody go Lois Griffin in real life until it happened.
She did.
So, was there any one particular person, or was it just the culmination, the cumulative effect of everything, that made you say that this is not what I was promised? This is not my country.
I think it's a culmination of everything. You know, it's because when I was growing up, unfortunately, I always thought that, quote unquote, the Republic. I was telling somebody, I said, it used to be that no matter who was in office, everybody always seemed to get what they wanted or needed. Well, unbeknownst to me, and I guess I can say this because I learned it several years ago, somebody was saying Reagan was so lovely, and I found out what he did to mental health in the 80s. And in California, I believe it was while he was governing in his own state of California, he closed all the mental health facilities. Now, what's that going to do for people who really need
that help? Okay, so that was the one that ruined it for you?
That should have totally ruined everything. After, you know, everything after that, because I think Republicans are crazy now, so I wouldn't vote for one if you paid me. But yeah, I mean, that was, but I mean, there were some other things
you did later find out, you know, what went on with the nastiness of the secret war in Central America and John Negroponte and the Contras and Adolfo Calero and all those miserable penny-ante thugs. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the shine's been off of Ronald Reagan for a long time for me, if he ever had any shine at all. Yeah.
But it just,
I know. Well, Heather, it's awfully good to hear from you, and I'm glad you're not being a stranger. Chime in anytime.
All righty, I will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Oh, my pleasure. Bye. Thanks for calling. Bye. And just for any of you who don't know what I'm talking about, you heard, I trust you heard in the debate when she said, I took money for Wall Street 9/11. Well, this is the clip from Family Guy that apparently has now become, you know, reality, which is just weird.
What about crime in our city?
A lot. Because that's what Jesus wants. 9/11 was bad.
I agree with that.
I can't believe how easy this is.
Mrs. Griffin, what are your plans for cleaning up our environment?
9/11.
Mrs. Griffin, what about our traffic problem?
9/11.
And the best part about that clip is that you heard him. It was apparently recorded with a video camera or something off of a television by a stoner, because it comes with the stoner laugh. Yeah. So again, and now, if you want to jump into the More and Monday mix, both lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. That spells 304-663-HORN. And either line, and Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. We have raised, thanks to Randy and Carol, we have raised $70 of $130 that we're trying to raise this evening. And, again, there is a challenge out on the table from Tony in Chico, who is probably one of the oldest, one of the longest standing subscribers that we have here. And Tony is offering a challenge. He will double your first month's contribution for the first 10 $10 new subscribers this month. So you kick in at 10 bucks, then Tony will double it for this first month. So if you'd like to see that happen, and you'd like to take advantage of a most excellent offer, well, become a new subscriber, and you will be the proud recipient of a Horn bumper sticker, courtesy of our buddy Scott, who even went so far as to provide the postage. Yes. No, what I said a moment ago, and all of that happens over at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. Okay? Okay. What I said a minute ago, or referenced a minute ago, you may recall this guy from one of his other great hits, Women Should Shut Up in Church. We're talking about a creep by the name of Stephen Anderson. He's got some sort of miserable gospel sharp set up going out in Arizona stand. Now, the band that was playing in concert at the Bataclan Theater in Paris Friday night was an outfit called the Eagles of Death Metal, which is just a play on words, pun, smart alecky, whatever you want to call it. They are not a death metal band. Not that, you know, music's music. Some people like, you know, choral, you know, what have you, opera, all kinds of stuff. Other people like death metal, and it's all okay. Because music is the common language of us all, right? Yeah, so. Not bothering to find out what the band was about, And they're kind of a rockabilly, boogie, bluesy kind of thing. It's listenable. I listened to a few tracks after the program on Friday and over the weekend just to find out a little bit more. But I do that. I'm detail-oriented. Not pastor, brother, minister, Reverend Stephen Anderson. Lord, this guy is somebody's neighbor. I don't know. Maybe he lives next to that Rick Wiles guy whose dog Gator barks at the inflatable spider at Halloween. Wouldn't it be nice if we could, if they could all just live in the same neighborhood and they could get into like little doctrinal wars with each other? No, you don't want that either. You want to spread them out and dilute their influence. But anyway, he took to the pulpit on Sunday to warn the faithful there of Knuckle Dragger Baptist, and to explain to them what happened in the attack of Friday evening. Here then, get the hockey puck. I'd go around twice with the duct tape if I were you.
I'm deeply religious, and I felt like the devil had given me a song. He's talking about songwriting. I'm deeply religious, and
I think we're going to have to back up for this. Sorry, I can't miss that. Okay, maybe we're back. Oh, we should be all right here.
Fans. He also refuses to do anything at less than full tilt. Make no mistake, hanging out with Hughes is a proper rock and roll experience. An unashamed fan of crystal meth, or as he calls it, speed. The craggy-faced and ginger mustache. Self-confessed hillbilly from South Carolina.
Wait, or as he calls it, speed? Why didn't he hold up his fingers in some, you know, what was it? Dick finger, air quotes. Right. Yeah, okay. But anyway, do continue on, Pastor, Brother, Minister, Reverend Anderson.
Looks and acts like a man born to be a rock star. And he proudly reels off one debauched story after another. He's not nicknamed the devil for nothing. He has endless tales of fighting, shagging, and drug-taking excess. Now, I wish I could read you more of the article, but it's all so filthy and profane, it was hard to even find any quotes from this article that could even be read from behind the pulpit. But here's a few that I found. Here's what he said. I'm deeply religious, and I felt like the devil had given me a song. He's talking about songwriting. I'm deeply religious, and I felt like the devil had given me this song. So his religion's to worship the devil.
Right.
Eagles of Death Metal is the name of the band. And the Bible says in Proverbs, all they that hate me love death.
That's right.
Speaking of God, those who hate God love death. You know, there's...
I thought he was going to say it says in Proverbs that all who hate me, all who love the Eagles hate that. Well, but, yeah. I mean, they did do that song about ooh, ooh, witchy woman, but that's the Eagles, not the Eagles of Death Metal. See how easy it is to get lost?
Something about when you go to a concert of death metal, somebody might get killed.
Right.
You know, you're worshiping death. And then all of a sudden people start dying. Oh, wait a minute. What's going on? Well, you love death so much.
Yeah.
That you bought the ticket?
Yeah.
You love worshiping Satan? Well, let's have some of Satan's religion come in and shoot you. I mean, that's what these people should think about before they go to such a wicked concert.
And thanks for helping, Pastor Brother Anderson. The folks in ISIS would especially like to thank you for helping people to in their part of the world understand that everything they've ever said about Christianity is absolutely true. Because here's a Christian.
Look, I'm not condoning what these Islamic murderers did. They're wicked. They're murderers. But you know what? Nobody should be at a concert worshiping Satan with this drug-pushing hillbilly faggot. And that's what he is. I mean, all you have to do is just Google this band. Somebody told me, somebody emailed me and said, just hit Google Images, Eagles of Death Metal. And these guys are just total sodomite-looking freaks.
Sodomite-looking. Sodomite-looking. This sounds like a good moment for a moment, a good time for a moment of philosophy. Are you there? Are you there, Dr. Spicoli?
You dick!
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. Sodomite-looking. Looking. Right, yes, absolutely. Hey, let's run over to yonder Skype line and check in with our buddy Tom from FYI. Oh, Tom.
Hey, Pastor Brother Bob.
Oh, that's only Wednesdays.
Well, close enough. I feel like a stalker, but I dealt with this fool on my show and Uncle Pat. And I noticed they both did the same thing that Christianity likes to do. They blame the victim. Like if
they could have a time machine, they'd be standing there at the foot of the cross on Calgary going, you know, it's your own fault, don't you? You did this to yourself.
Exactly. They both blame, like, Unky Pat did it more benignly. Well, she died. You don't know whether she hated her husband or hated God or whatever. But she's dead. But she heard your prayer. That was earlier today. And then this guy, oh, well, you went to a band. You deserved it. It's like, who would want to worship in this dude's church?
So that means if I go to a drive-by truckers concert, as mm-hmm. a member of the Horn Family Commune congregation did recently, I think, that would mean that I should expect to be run over by a semi?
Yeah, it means I totally think so. I just wanted to let you know that this is not anything that anybody should be surprised with, because this is a regular thing with what they call what is it, prosperity churches, like $7,000 million club, and this guy who isn't very prosperous but still an asshat, and I just think it's. It boggles my mind, and just another reason why I'm happy I came out as an atheist finally. Just saying.
and a happy one at that. Right.
Yes.
I get it. Look, I'll be the first to admit that if you read through the Gospels, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi doesn't always come off as being screwed down real tight.
No.
Anyone who would follow me must hate his mother. Oh, Dr. Freud! But then again, you know, if your mom said, yeah, hey, he's dad, right? No, son, you're the son of God. You know, meanwhile, every other little boy on the block is being told that he's the son of God, too.
Yeah.
But, no. There's some loopy stuff in there, but there's also, you know, some pretty clear indications of where his head was about the poor, about the hungry, the homeless,
oh, yeah.
the sick, the imprisoned, the meek, the peacemakers. It's not just cheesemakers, dear. It's all purveyors of dairy products. Right. And he's not any of these people that clowns like this Steven Anderson are talking about. These are the real death worshippers. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. For that, and you know, they're following a tradition that arises out of St. Paul. For Paul, Saul on the Lamb, changed the name. It seemed to work at that time. Aren't you that Saul guy? No. It just rhymes with Paul. Paul. Oh well. Okay. You know, he made tents, too. How about that? What a coincidence. Hey, but, you know, for Saul, nothing that happened in Jesus' life mattered until he got to the INRI part, which, of course, we all know stands for I'm Nailed Right In. Nothing mattered until they murdered him and he turned into a zombie. That's where Christianity starts with Paul, and that's a large part of the problem with Christianity generally, at least the Christianity that survived the steel cage death match between people who wanted to live like Jesus and the people who said, no, let's all die like Jesus. Oddly enough, the people who wanted to die like Jesus won. You'd think they would have died out, but they didn't.
No, yeah, you're right. You're not wrong. And the good ones are way too quiet and way too passive aggressive.
And they won't say no. Steven Anderson is not going to heaven.
Yeah,
and he's not going to be up there with us, and he's not going to be at the ice cream social, and no harp for you.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong, because this is not in catechism. When I paid attention, this is not what I was taught. You know, and this perversion of Christianity that, you know, he's able to get away with and then broadcast through the world is a bunch of knuckleheads and shouldn't be laughed at on a regular basis and then taught not to be like this. But sadly, too many are more like this than ever.
All too sadly. All too sadly. Well, don't feel like a stalker or anything. You're more than welcome to pick up the phone and chime in just any old time.
Well, I figured it might be hurting some of your listeners' ears because I played him earlier and then you're playing him and it's like...
No, we're just reinforcing.
Yeah, that's... Okay, that works. I'm okay with that. But here's the thing. Here's my question to you, Bob. When do we start having someone who will tell a story about peace and how peace works? And not from, you know, the blood of the lamb or any of that. Like, when will we have somebody like Bernie Sanders? Maybe he doesn't want to because he's too, and this is a good thing, but too, not...
too focused on getting elected?
Yeah, well, no. Too not into himself. Like, he's too focused on helping every... He always says we and not me. But I wish, like, on the debate night, he talked about how his family ran from the Nazis and how we must confront evil by and let people in. And he was welcomed here by the greatest country, you know, and maybe not in that language because that's not him. But you know what I mean? I really, and maybe it's the leftover Republican in me. Ooh, scary thought. But I really wish he spoke more like that than starting a little and then going into a stump speech. As much as I adore and love him and am probably more socialist than him, it came off weird.
Well, everybody's saying that, you know, Hillary won the debate.
Oh, no, she didn't win the debate. I thought he won the debate, but I just thought that initial I thought he slayed it the rest of the debate. But that initial couple of moments, I was like, what am I watching?
Well, I was just glad he stuck to his guns. I hate that phrase, but
yeah,
because see, the campaign would have been over if he had said, "Nope, I was wrong about climate change. I'm sorry. It's scary Muslims. I was wrong all along."
Oh no, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm glad he didn't.
Gotta bomb them all to pieces.
No, you're absolutely right about that. But I guess my point is, one of the great qualities, and I know he's not Bill Clinton, but one of the great qualities about Bill Clinton was he could captivate you and get you in with a story. And even with Jesus, right? He got you in with a story, and then you went there. We already have people who are going for Bernie because of his message. He needs to touch the people who are on the edge, or maybe not quite there yet. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking if that message of inclusion and how America welcome, because he's an American success story. You know, who else could have escaped everything his family did, came here and became mayor and a socialist at that and everything else? You know, and I know it's not his style, and maybe that's the best thing about him. Maybe I'm trying to turn him into something he's not. But Americans are used to that. And I think it might maybe help a little. Am I wrong?
I don't think you are, but I'll give you an idea of how far we have to go. Enter stage ultra right, Mark Stein and Stuart Varney over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. That very exchange about climate change, where Bernie said if we're going to see an increase in drought and flood and extreme weather disturbances as a result of climate change, what that means is that people all over the world are going to be fighting over limited natural resources. there's not enough water, not enough land to grow your crops, then you're going to see migrations of people fighting over land, which some of this is already happening in Syria, and some of it is part of why Syria became what Syria is.
Yes.
Okay, so all of that's going on, and here comes the clown car. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Hockey puck, Tom, hockey puck.
Here's one for you. Bernie Sanders, well, he's doubling down on his claim that there is a link between climate change and terrorism. Roll that tape, please.
In fact, climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. And if we do not get our act together and listen to what the scientists say, you're going to see countries all over the world. This is what the CIA says. They're going to be struggling over limited amounts of water, limited amounts of land to grow their crops. And you're going to see all kinds of international conflict.
All right, Mark, climate change?
Yeah, he's brilliant, that guy. I mean, al-Baghdadi will be sawing Bernie Sanders' head off, and he'll be saying, as his neck's being sliced into, oh, if only we'd had an emissions trading scheme. This is insane. And it shows the level of delusion and denial among the Western political leadership.
Yeah. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, it's so funny when people get their heads sawed off.
Yeah. Yeah, and not even recognizing what his family escaped.
No. That doesn't count. That doesn't count.
You know, I mean, if it was anybody, if it was
well,
anybody
if he was
else,
grateful for being, if he was grateful for escaping the Holocaust, and he was grateful for being in America, he wouldn't be a socialist.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Probably deserves to have his head sawed off.
But, no, you're
but
right.
But this much is true, Tom. I got another one for you. Don't lose the hockey puck. This one came in just a little bit ago.
Oh boy!
Apparently, there is somebody out on the Twitter. Haley sent this to me. There is somebody out on the Twitter. Who calls herself Wheezy something or another.
Mm-hmm.
Big Trump fan, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Louise Reynolds is this person's name.
Not my last name. No. I'm not related.
No,
even if I am, no relation.
Well, there's a reason. I mean, I wanted to give you that opportunity. That's why I brought her up.
No relation.
Her bio on Twitter of @Wheezy's94 says, "Married, and I'm definitely an antique car buff. Own 3 cars. Go to car shows a lot. Looking for a 1972 Chevy Nova. And a Trump supporter." So, down in Statesville, North Carolina, she's looking for a Trump supporter and a Chevy Nova. At least as far as I can tell. So, here's what she tweeted. This is a quote. Mm. It's not me. Agent Fred, this is not me. This is Wheezy. Down in Statesville, North Carolina. It's right on down I-77, real easy to find. You know, good presidents were shot for less. Why hasn't he been shot at or killed yet? Go figure.
Oh, my God.
So while Fox is giggling about the prospect of Bernie Sanders getting his head sawed off, and, of course, they won't get a visit from the Secret Service because
no.
It's money, Wheezy in Statesville... it just doesn't understand why somebody hasn't murdered the president of the United States yet. And the thing is, Tom, these are not outliers.
No, they're not.
I mean, I really don't think we can emphasize that enough. These are not the far fringe of the Republican Party. If they were, Donald Trump wouldn't enjoy the numbers that he does.
Yeah, no, this isn't the conservative party that I belonged to even years ago. When I was a conservative, this is not that party. And the fact that I don't recognize it, and I don't understand. Somebody asked me on my show a while ago if I would ever be a conservative again, or if I would have you know, changed parties. I would have at least gone independent, because I wouldn't be able to live with myself with all the vitriol that I'm seeing from this party. It's ungodly if we're going to use that term, you know, and it's that we have all these states that are turning away refugees and they're happy to do it. And it's just, what happened to, you know, bring us your tired, your poor, and yada, yada, yada. What happened to that? Oh, wait, they might wear a headscarf. I
scary Muslims.
Yeah, it saddens me, and it brings me no joy to have to deal with this on a regular basis. But there are so few of us, and I'm glad you're one of us, that do that. You know, I feel I have to. You know, I'm like a moth to the light. I gotta do it, and I'm very happy and grateful to have you and the whole Horn family on our corner and on our network.
We're tickled to be a part of it. We absolutely are. So all we can do, I guess, is what's it say in the Bible? Gird up your loins with the. I've never girded my loins, and I'm afraid I might enjoy it, and then I'd go blind.
Well, yeah, that could be a bad thing if you do it the wrong way.
Is that what it is? I've been doing it the wrong way.
Huh? Yeah, see, there's a technique. With everything comes a technique, and if you don't have it, you might.
My vision's failing. Quit it. You've gone too far. Yeah. Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great.
Let me ask you: did you guys have fun Saturday evening with the debate and stuff?
Oh, it was joy. It was a pure joy. We thought we were going to fall asleep with the whole terror thing, but that had to be done. And then Bernie rocked it.
And there had to be just hooting and hollering when Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton went all 9/11.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she turned into Rudy Giuliani right before our eyes. I was shocked. I didn't know she could do that.
Well, and in that instance, the only thing you can do is quote Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now. The horror. The horror.
Yes.
Tom, have a good.
You too. Thanks, Bob.
Sure. Bye now. That's our buddy Tom from FYINation.com. By the way, you know how Pastor Brother Anderson called the guy in Eagles of Death Metal a fagoot? Mm-hmm. Well, Mark down in Florida or elsewhere, never know where Mark is, sent me a little quote. In a 2007 interview, bandmate Josh Homme, I've been told how to pronounce his name, stated, "Jesse Hughes and I have a theory. We're socially liberal, but government conservative guys." Hughes has also said, "I wanted to be a Republican politician, for God's sakes. I'm a conservative dude." And they're married with children, too, Mark tells me. Thank you, Mark. But never mind the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing Christian minister, Stephen Anderson, who says that they're hillbilly. Yeah, I hate that. Let's see if there's any stupid left in him. I'm sure there is.
You know, but nobody thinks about that. It says, "Oh no, let's stand with France." No, France is a sinful, wicked nation. Let me tell you a little bit about France. I'm sorry. Before I do, though, let me finish some of these quotes from this article. Hughes claims that doing crystal meth helps his creativity. He says, "I wrote our first album when I was on a hot run of speed." Recalling one occasion where he feared for his life, Hughes recalls, "In 2010, I was at a gay bar in Oklahoma."
Well, that would make you fear for your life now, wouldn't it? Gay bar in Oklahoma.
"Because the secret to score speed all around America is gay bars at 5 a.m. Okay, these people who got...
Well, we know where the congregation of that church is going to be, don't we? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, there's a song. This just kind of goes with it. Hold on. Yeah, yeah. You can't. Yeah, nope. Got to.
Come on, you sinners. And you're all sinners. Pray with me. I've been preachifying, moralizing every day. Trying to get all lost souls to come my way. Because I know what you sinners lack. And I know what you need. A back rub from a muscle man and Godspeed. Give me death and madness on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, okay, enough of that, but I couldn't resist. You just don't get that many opportunities to play that song. Now, what was that, Brother Pastor Reverend Anderson?
I shot in France. We're going to see a guy who likes to hang out at gay bars at 5 a.m. Okay, now listen, again, not condoning the murderers, but I'm telling
you. No, yes, you are, but I want to make sure we get all of that.
With this drug-pushing hillbilly faggot, and that's what he is. I mean, all you have to do is just Google this band. Somebody emailed me and said, just hit Google Images, Eagles of Death Metal. And these guys are just total sodomite-looking freaks. Yeah. You know, but nobody thinks about that. It's just, oh, no.
You know, I find it interesting that he calls somebody a sodomite-looking freak when Pastor Steven Anderson, with his close-cropped little beard and everything and his close-cropped little hair, you wouldn't be surprised to see him done up in a little bit of leather, maybe about a half a gimp mask wandering around. No, and what would you bet that he does?
Let's stand with France. No, France is a sinful, wicked nation.
So we're going to find out why it is that France had it coming.
Tell you a little bit about France. I'm sorry, before I do, though, let me finish some of these quotes from this article. Hughes claims that doing crystal meth helps his creativity. He says...
Skip a bit, brother.
But I'm telling you something. God will judge you when you live a life of sin.
Right.
There's consequences to sin. And you know what the Bible says?
Notice all the amen and it's from the guys. Oh, wait a minute. This guy's from the church where women have to remain silent.
Says, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Sometimes just hanging around with the wrong people can get you destroyed.
Yep.
How many people do you know where they were in a situation where they weren't even guilty of anything, but they were just hanging around with the worst kind of people, and then they got into trouble, and they got into guilt by association and everything else. This was a very wicked event where this took place, this Eagles of Death Metal.
I like how his eyes bug out when he says that, but that's the video, and I'm dancing about architecture now. Like I said, the degree to which these monsters just bathed themselves in blood and reveled in it, it danced in it, finger painted with it, astonishing. Tim from L.A. sent me a link over the weekend and said, Bob, this has to happen. You got to address this during More In Monday. And I agree. The same guy who was laughing about about sawing off Bernie Sanders' head. You know, I wish I had a hacksaw. Now, I'm sorry, I had the wrong accent, didn't I? Yes, I certainly did. He said, the barbarians are inside and there are no gates. Stop pretending terrorism has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is the religion of violence. That was Eric Erickson. Stop pretending terrorism has nothing to do with Islam. That was that blog that has popped up, the Federalist. That's a Beckerhead thing. Eric Erickson went on to say, I love that they're not real Muslims tweets. Yes, they are. Tim asks, I wonder how long before the violence starts against the Asian and African Americans and they're assaulted and some Republican decides that it's time to put these folks into concentration camps, even though both Bush and Reagan said that not all Muslims are terrorists. It happened once before during World War II from a Democratic president. Imagine having a racist teabagger president spewing more hate and racism. What my people and family went through during World War II, it's going to be a lot worse for those who look like a Muslim. And this includes atheists, agnostics, humanists, and Coptic Christians. Be prepared, Tim urges, for racial violence and possibly a revolt. Newt Gingrich said, now can we have a serious debate about millions of Syrian refugees and how many terrorists will be in the crowd? Anthrax Coulter said, think of all the wonderful things the refugees are bringing to Europe. Rape, murder, car burnings, list is endless. It goes on and on and on. It's absolutely disgusting. Just disgusting. But not in the least surprising. And I guess we saved the worst for last. T-Rump. T-Rump wants everybody to know that he's got it in hand. Well, I mean, stop that. For some reason or another, they invited him onto Morning Joe. You're going to have to watch and study the mosques, because a lot of talk is going on at the mosques. Yeah. From what I heard in the old days, meaning a while ago, we had great surveillance going on in and around mosques in New York City, and I understand our mayor totally cut that out. He totally cut it out. Because, well, you know, T-Rump, And then there's the reality of what happened in St. Petersburg, Florida. Voicemail message left on the, for the Islamic Society of St. Petersburg. They canceled Sunday school over safety concerns. This act in France is the last straw. You're going to, okay. Gonna fucking die. I personally have a militia that's gonna come down to your Islamic Society of Pinellas County and firebomb you, shoot whoever's there in sight on site in the head. I don't care if they're 2 years old or 100. Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God. Amen. But a little reminder. I said that Donald's going to take it in hand. Carol notes, a dirty mind is its own reward. The masturbatory musings of the Donald are well in hand with Moaning Joe. Oh, a triple word score. Yeah. But a little something to sort of take us out of the swamp before we close out this Moran Monday. The story goes back about a year. Exactly a year, actually. It's called Gate A4. Wandering around the Albuquerque Airport Terminal after learning my flight had been delayed 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate A4 was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing. Help, said the flight agent. Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this. I stooped to put my arm around the woman and spoke haltingly. Shudawa, Shubuduk, Abibti, Stanishwe, Minfadlik, Shubitsiwi. The minute she heard any words she knew, however, poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for major medical treatment the next day. I said, no, we're fine. You'll get there. Just late. Who's picking you up? Let's call him. We called her son. I spoke with him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on the plane. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, that they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her? This all took up 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, telling about her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She'd pulled a sack of homemade mamoul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts. Well, there's our food porn portion for the program. From her bag and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single traveler declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo. We were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There is no better cookie. Then the airline broke out free apple juice, and two little girls from our flight ran around serving it. And they were covered with powdered sugar, too. And I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag. Some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country traveling tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted to somewhere. And I looked around that gate of late, and weary ones, and thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. Not a single person in that gate, not one of the crying confusion stopped, seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women, too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. You're here. 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 And so we come to the close of this Moran Monday, the 16th of November, 2015. Thank you for your kindness in joining in the conversation, in the festivities. However you have done so. We may be having a problem with the chat room. If there is, I apologize. Back tomorrow evening for Titanic Tuesday. Hopefully between now and then we will make up the $130 we need to stay out of the hole. 13 at 10, 10 at 13. The next 10 subscribers, the next 10 new subscribers, of course, get their first month's contribution doubled, courtesy of Tony and Chico. That'd be great. And bumper sticker, too. Yay. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.